Welcome to the Talk Over podcast, a conversational platform for the DJs by the DJs, brought to you by Double and Stylus.
Swag.
Tune in every week to hear us talk about all the things we see, hear and experience as DJs. Don't forget to subscribe to the channel by simply searching Talk Over podcast on either Spotify or Apple Music.
Hashtag Talk Over podcast at Talk Over pod. I'm DJ Double today. Hashtag us online, follow us on Twitter. Yeah, man, we're back on the guests. We had a little bit of a break over Christmas. Me and Double just chopped it up a couple of times, but, you know, we decided that people don't want to hear us talk too much nonsense, so we're back. We have guests. We have loads of guests.
We have guests. Big ups to DJ John Boy for last week's episode. For everybody that's caught up to date with the Podclar episodes, we had a very in-depth, very deep, very serious conversation with John Boy last week. If you haven't checked that episode out yet, I definitely recommend you do. Even if it doesn't apply to you, it might apply to someone you know. If nothing else, it's actually a really good conversation just to listen to be fair. But yeah, very dope episode with John Boy last week. So big ups to John Boy.
Shout out all the crew in Belfast, actually. That spot is the one, cuz.
I was saying in the episode last week, man, you wouldn't know this because you didn't listen to it. But
I'll get there, bro. Leave it out, man.
Thompson's was the booking, my very first cancellation because of the first lockdown. It was I think it was like the 7th or the 12th of April I was meant to be out there playing.
Oh, it was, yeah, I remember.
That was like my first proper, it's not overseas, no, it is overseas, because you have to fly over the sea to get there, so that was my first overseas booking for the year.
The week of lockdown, bruv, that week, I was booked at Thompson's on the Thursday.
So you were meant to be there, and then like 2 weeks after, or a week after, it was meant to be me.
The day everything got locked off, man, that week was meant to be me, my booking.
We're gonna.
I remember having the busiest week of the last couple of years. That week when we got locked off, I think I was doing like 6 gigs, 3 cities, mooching around. Lock off, mate.
Mad.
Everything lock off.
We're gonna have to persuade Mark to book us both at the same time for Thompson's. Do you know how lit that would be, bro? That would be like...
That'll get messy still.
That would be like Edinburgh all over again.
All right, so Dummy's waiting in the waiting room. Should we let him in?
Let him in. Bring him in!
Yeah, man. Special guest on the podcast today, Dummy Siwoo. Let's bring him in and we can big him up.
Dummy got a fanfare and all sorts.
Look at the backdrop.
Oh, you can tell straight away. You can see straight away this guy's a visual guy, isn't it? Like this.
That is amazing. That is absolutely amazing.
The aesthetics on Dummy's set right now. This is like, yes.
He's double phoned me last night and he was like, can you see if he's like using a microphone and stuff? I was like, oh, he'll be all right. Look, he's got he's prepared.
I'm on the biggest show right now, so I thought, you know what? I've got to impress the boys.
I love that. Is that The Office?
Yeah, it is.
You can't go wrong with a bit of greenery in the background there. Lovely stuff.
That's it, man. I think there was a time where everyone was changing their offices to green, and we got these. These were the hardest to get, but once we got them...
So is that a square patches stuck together, or have you bought a big one? Because I've been looking for something for mine.
It's the fake ones, the square ones. I think there's about 50 maybe, all just put together.
Lovely stuff.
So what is it? Artificial leaves, artificial foliage.
Yeah.
Nice.
I don't think real ones are going to last too long on the wall, mate.
No. I couldn't see what the texture was. I couldn't see what, like... Oh, I'll leave it out.
It's really hard to see the difference, isn't it? So, unless you go and touch it.
That's giving me... have you seen the film Get Him to the Greek?
Oh, yeah, I have.
Where he's got the furry wall.
I can't relate, guys. I don't think I've seen that one.
Have you not?
Get it in your list, man.
Am I missing out, yeah?
Yes.
Yeah, you're missing out.
That's absolutely one for the notes.
You should watch.
All right, so Talk Over Pod, we're back in the building, Stylus and Double. We have a special guest today. We've spoke about this a couple of times, actually, and we've had one or two dates locked in. It's not worked, but we're here today. Dummy Siwu is in the building. I was trying to figure out the best way to introduce this guy because I feel like you do a little bit of everything, man. Obviously, we met through more through the clubbing scene with you doing Love Doe. You now obviously run Firmative and tapped into all sort of creative angles. Like, what? Who is Dummy Siwu? And, like, what do you actually do now? Like, can you may as well break it down for us, bro.
Who are you, bro?
Mate, that's a complicated question. Even myself, like, once in a while, I change it. I'm like, what should I be? Like, I'm more on the media side. But I think I've just broken it down to, I like creating stuff. So as far as being creative goes, everything comes from music with me.
Okay.
So, like, my whole journey through music and everything I do. So I guess I'd introduce myself as someone who's really interested in the creative aspects of music, and then just I try and evolve through that. So that's the best way I could describe myself.
It's because I see what you're doing now, obviously, with the Firmative stuff. Like, was that something that was always in the back of your mind when you stepped into doing, like, the nightclub scene? Obviously, being an all-round creative guy, I feel like we're capable of tapping into all sorts of stuff. Like, if the creative energy is in you, like, you just kind of, like, run at things. I know you've used the camera and you've done the vlogs and you've been working in that line for a while, but obviously Firmative now been on the front line and being super loud and out there. Like, is that something that was always consciously in the back of your mind to build your own business in the creative industry, or
100%, bro, 100%. So, I guess the backstory for it all is when I was a little bit younger, like living in Zambia, from probably the age of obviously being born to 13, I lived my half of my life is in Zambia. So I'm still fluent in the language down there and the rest of it, but back then, because we didn't have so much access to the outside world in terms of your ambitions were very limited from where I was from anyway. The stuff you saw on TV were like, it's the things that you dream about. You look at them and think, okay, cool, that's what the world's like in the US and UK. I'll never get to live that type of life, but that's your escapism, do you know what I mean? So when I sat down and watched how films were made, I was intrigued in trying to do something video-led. Even just the simple idea of a cable being connected to a TV, I was like, how the hell do you put images through?
Quality.
Small things. So then when my mum had the sort of opportunity to come to the UK and become a nurse here, she then brought us here with her. I begged her to come here, to be fair.
So how old was she then, Dummy? Did you say 13 when you came to the UK?
Yeah, I was 13.
Okay.
I was 13. So totally different. Didn't have the accent, broken English at the time. And just ended up in a situation where I could have the opportunity to create video somehow. And the first time I had some money, I picked up a camera around 13. So that would probably be 2004. And back then, I was just filming my friends and creating what I thought was a cool music video.
So I found something on the internet today.
Nah. You know what, bro? When you told me, I was going to come on this podcast, I tried to hide everything. And I was like, Daddy, how do I access this?
You can't come on here and hide anything, don't you? I won't bait you up. I was just doing a little bit of research and I actually came across it by accident. I think you know which video I'm talking about. Was it?
Yeah, there's a few of them. but yeah, definitely. Back then, I was just filming my friends or filming ourselves or things I was interested in. So like dancing, music at the time. When SBTV was filming their stuff, we were called something called like Sweetboy TV.
That was it.
Back then, me and my friend used to be like, wow, we're going to film all the best rappers in Peterborough. And we used to do that. Do you know what I mean? When Jamal was doing his thing back then, but you know, things changed. So my interest has always been there. It comes from video. And then I've also got all my degrees are video led. So college diploma in media production. And then I graduated with film, television and drama degree.
Nice.
And then worked in TV. And so, yeah, my background was always video. It's just the events fell into an accidental way.
I was about to say somewhere along the line you got caught up.
Yeah, 100%, bro. In my second year, Matt, who's the owner of Loveday,
legend,
came in, and he was launching what he thought was a no-brainer in Lincoln. Lincoln didn't have any clubs, and I was here, obviously doing my university degree, kind of like lost because I didn't know whether I was going to end up working in TV. And your only path when you're doing a media degree is to end up working in TV at the time. Do you know what I mean? Because social wasn't massive. And then he started to put out an ad just saying, you know, Lovedo's coming to Lincoln. I found out all this information. And at the time, I was a big fan of people like JME, people like Skepta. And he was talking about how this brand had worked with all these people. I got excited, bro. And BBC Extra was so big, right, that when he said he was one of the first ones to do a live BBC One Extra sort of club event in Ibiza, I was literally like, I got to work for these people.
I'm involved.
This is me. This is what I've always wanted to do. And Matt's not social media savvy at all. He's the founder of Lovedo, you know, since 2001. And when I got involved with the brand, it was being run by someone who was who loved house music. Right. So I was just like, yo, I'm about to get you a job. I'm about to take that off your hands.
I love that.
I used video as my sort of proposal to him that
okay. Do
more video content on Facebook.
So you kind of offered them like that opportunity for them to level up and move into, obviously, as the years have gone by, digital like creation and all that kind of stuff has elevated. So you kind of went there offering to open that avenue to them.
100%. Yeah. And then obviously that started to work. And because I loved editing videos so much, we just edited so many. You know, stylists, by the time you sort of came, we would promote the DJ. And I was a big fan, obviously, of DJs. You know, my guy, CJ, is always the person that made me think, I fucking love DJs. Because I saw the difference between a normal DJ just playing music and like a technically skilled DJ. To today, I still tell CJ how every time he started with the Lion King, I was like, CJ's here. DJ is here. He's playing this week. And I think since then, since sort of running Lovedo, and then my respect for DJs has grown. And the video element just ended up being a combination of using my passion. And that was the creative. Do you know what I mean? Like using my passion and music and video all like combined into this, into this thing that would then sell the DJ and sell my event in Reflect. And yeah, and I guess maybe that's why some of the DJs enjoyed playing in Lincoln, because there was this, we created this buzz for DJs.
I think that helps, man. I think the fact that you appreciate the art and what really goes into it and having them relationships. I even wrote down in my notes like the importance of like looking after and having relationships with DJs, and I feel like you have that in abundance and has played a massive role in the success of what you guys done in Lincoln especially.
Yeah, man, it's something that came without trying to think about money either. It's, I wanted to party and I wanted my song to be played so I could make a little circle and bring back my little dancing roots. It was completely selfish. It was like, well, I can't get a job in London. I keep getting rejected. So let me find a way to just pay my bills and enjoy my life. And then that obviously becomes an actual income, do you know what I mean? Eventually. And the fact that my best friends became DJs,
I'm surprised you didn't end up being a DJ dummy, you know? I'm surprised you didn't pick up the turntables going off with this conversation so far. Sounds like you could have tapped in.
I wanted to, but I think it's more the fact that I like being a fan.
Okay.
I didn't want to be the guy that tries to be a fan and takes away from... Well, I'm not saying I would become the sick DJ, right? But I just liked being the fan, and I didn't want to crossover ever. It's just like, let me be the fan of the DJ because this relationship works better. Okay. I get to dance to my friend. Do you know what I mean?
I had no idea you was doing the dance routines, bro. When I seen that video, I was like, Dom is creative in many angles.
Ah, man. It's that's what I wanted to be when I was, you know, when I came to the UK. I just wanted to be part of something. Do you know what I mean? I was kind of like desperate to live the life I never had in Africa. So I was like, dancer? Yeah, learn that. Do you know what I mean?
Fairs.
I love Asha, let me try and sing. That part didn't work out, but it was always the idea of let me do things I never had the opportunity to do in Zambia.
When you got here, did it live up to the expectations of what you had expected from what you'd seen when you were in Zambia?
No. I had to adapt really quick and very as fast as I could, because at the time, being a teenager, you're going through that phase of, you know, you're just discovering your life. And at that time, you probably, I wanted a girlfriend, I wanted to be popular, that kind of stuff. So
yeah.
I came at that pinnacle age where my friends understood how to move around. I come from a completely different culture that when I came here, I needed to adapt so quick. Mm-hmm. I thought I could take my person, the same person who's in Zambia,
yeah,
drop them off in the UK and sort of be normal. It wasn't. Like, it was like, you need to get to know how people move here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know? Culturally it's massively different. But so where did you first move to when you and your mum came over? Was it Peterborough?
Yeah, Peterborough. So I came from a small village inside of Peterborough called Whittlesey.
And what's the population like there? Like in terms of ethnicity, was there much of like an African like immigrant population there, or was it purely just predominantly white?
Bro, I was the only black guy.
Right.
In my school. My parents were the only black family in that small village.
Right, okay. So culturally then it is a complete reversal.
Yeah.
Because with people that I've spoken to that have made a similar journey to you seem to always end up in certain parts of London where there is an African community. So they go to the schools, but it's fine. They're not the only black person and there is other people that speak their native languages. So it's fine. They get on and they kind of just fit in and slightly change. But yeah, for you to move from Zambia, English not be your first language and then end up in a white village in Peterborough. That's mad.
Yeah, it was, bro. It was, because I guess that's where I put up like a little statement when the Black Lives Matter movement started. And I guess when I arrived, you come from a country where they accept every single race, you know? Like, it's not a thing. It's not a conversation in Africa. In fact, I think it's the opposite. Like, Africa likes to welcome anyone from different worlds. So if you're from a different place, they bring you in. And when I came to the UK, it was totally different for my friends as well, because they had never seen a black guy in flesh in that town. They've never ventured out of Peterborough. So it was like a shock. On one side, I played it out like, damn, I must be a celebrity or something because everyone's just staring at me. You know?
That's crazy.
But it was overwhelming as well, because I had the extreme of it where you're just being stared at. The teachers didn't know what to do. My friends didn't know what to do. You know, they would touch my hands and go, oh, well, like, what is this?
Wow.
Do you know what I mean?
What really, that happened? Like, your teachers were touching the skin and...
Yeah, they'll just be, can I touch your hair?
Wow.
You know, those type of questions.
Mad.
It was sick. And at the time, look, when you have this conversation now, you sort of feel like it's an odd thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When I was there, it was just odd for me too. It's like, of course I want you to touch my hair because I also want to touch your hair. What is this? But obviously some people did take it to an extreme, and I did have like, proper real racist attacks on me in that small town over and over again, to the point where, you know, I started to get scared to go out and stuff. That's where the dancing element came in, because I started to watch videos of people. My relationship became about trying to understand what other black people do outside of my small little world.
Yeah.
So I was watching your Americans, your Ushers, and I was trying to dance like them. Like, and now that we're having this conversation, maybe back then I was trying to use video as a way to sort of escape from one world to another. If in Zambia it was like I wanted to be in the UK, and then the UK is like I want to be somewhere else because I'm not comfortable with what my reality looks like. So yeah, and then the journey kind of continues, man. I'm super optimistic because of where I actually, like, my foundation of where my family comes from. And I kind of want to mention this, because then you probably get a good perspective of why certain things don't faze me. Like, back in Zambia, my actual grandparents, my mum's parents, ended up in a sort of tragic situation, and I was there to sort of witness it. They were a fairly wealthy family, as in they had things they needed, but they were robbed and killed, shot at, you know, in front of all our faces. So from the fear I had from there, like 1996, this is, I'm 7 years old, and seeing it for myself and sort of being in a position where they could have shot all of us, you know, they only shot my grandparents and my granddad. And the way we sort of escaped that area, and, you know, this the car we used, the shots they fired, all these things that ring in my head. When I got over the fear of someone could kill me in the next year or 2 years, I knew that whatever happens in my life won't faze me as much. Do you know what I mean? I became probably thick skinned from there. I think everything I'll probably do from now, just I go back and go, it can't be as bad as that. Wow. So when I was in Whittlesey and all that was happening, there was always that, okay, this is a scary situation, or this is uncomfortable, but I've seen this, it can't be that bad. Let's keep it moving, sort of thing. So that's sort of my drive every day. You know, when you see stuff that I'm doing, it's just like, let's hold, reflect, and boom, let's move forward. This is what happened.
I feel like you have such, like, a positive, like, outlook on life as well. Like, the stuff when I see you, like, tweet, which is quite rare these days, but whenever you do pop onto Twitter, I feel like you're always giving out such a great positive message. And, like, I know you believe in, like, training heavily and looking after the mental state, and especially after hearing the story that you've just said, like, I think that's amazing, man, and just the... I mean, a good test of character there, bro, just to even hear that and to see how you're holding yourself and moving in the industry now, coming from where you've come from and what you've seen and been through. Like, I think that's amazing, bro.
Yeah, and it's all part of the journey, though. And that's kind of how I take it. I'm going through this journey, and there's reason to it. There's reason to it. And I'm looking to sort of just try to ever search for the truth. And through that, you know, we've met great friends and followed my passion. And that's kind of where today is, you know. I'm still in music. Do you know what I mean? So from the clubs, I guess the transition now is probably very clear. It's like I had that at the back of my head, and I was using my passion in video to sell my events. And then I was using my passion for the fact that I just enjoyed DJing and I enjoyed dancing. Put it all into one aspect, but the goal was always to create something in video production. And when the virus sort of hit, that was already running in the background.
It kind of tipped the other way to go all in with the affirmative stuff, with the clubs obviously being shut.
That's it. There are no distractions, because I was trying to do it every day. I was working in the morning to the afternoon on the media, and then trying to get afternoon to the club event every day. So when I didn't have to worry about club politics, and you know, bloody club politics take up your life.
There's a whole episode just on club politics, you know.
That's the one side of it I don't miss, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, bro, honestly, there's a whole conversation about that. But once that was out of the way, I had no excuses but to come in the office and spend all that time trying to do what I wanted to do.
Have you found that you've made a lot of progression then through the lockdown? Have you ticked off goals and achieved things that you thought might have taken longer because you've been able to concentrate more in the time?
Yeah, man, definitely. I found a new focus just when all the chaos, all the noise goes quiet, and there was a lot of noise. I didn't realize how much noise there was, you know? Mm. I'm calling it club politics, but now I'm looking back, it's more than that. once that noise, I actually had so much more space to be more creative and really explore what I can do. And it made me realize actually that the way I was running my business in the club industry could have been improved in so many ways, but I was so distracted with the fire of, hey, this event has to go on, this DJ's doing this, da-da-da-da-da, that I completely forgot that there were elements I pretty much could have improved to make the events better.
I feel like that's a common thing in the events world. Like, it's so, like the pace of it, like, it's so easy to get tied up. I look back to when we used to do Jam, and we were the same way. There's definitely things we could have done better, but you get that caught up in the chase and the making stuff work and turning stuff around so quick, it's easy to forget certain sides of it. Like, would you approach anything different going back to you stepping in with Love, though, being such like a big clubbing brand? They've been into, I don't know, 40-odd cities, different countries. Like, would you change anything looking back?
Yeah, man. I think while I love the party so much, I maybe should have, if I took the business side of it as serious as I did with the partying part of it, I could have done a lot more with the Lovedo brand because of its history. Mm-hmm. I mean, we did a lot, do you know what I mean? Once I sort of joined and kind of got it into social space and started to use that to market it, we were very good at that part of it, but I don't think we had a solid evolving foundation of what was going to come. We had these ideas at podcasts and you know, and vlogs and stuff would be very popular, but we were so focused on just getting a really good party happening. Mm-hmm. And making money out of that. When in reality we should have gone, we could use this party to create a podcast and have this interview when CJ comes to visit me. We, you know what you guys are doing, you know?
Yeah.
That sort of thing. When an artist, like you know, the opportunities we had to book people like ASAP Rocky, we should have like milked that into a long form interview, short form.
100.
And we had some ideas there, you know, would interview ASAP Rocky, but then was like, yeah, we've got this footage, just put it in the backlog.
I feel like Lovedo did tap in with I'm sure I've seen like backstage interviews and a few bits and bobs of content from Lovedo, possibly, unless I'm going crazy.
Not at your level, I'm talking about what you guys do. the level of work. I've said this before, I'm a big fan of what you guys are doing because I'm a big fan of Breakfast Club in, and I mentioned this to you, Double, right? I'm a big fan of Breakfast Club in the US, and I believe like what both of you guys are doing is going to end up being the same level they're at. Just because that's how they started. No one really got it, but when people started to get it, mm-hmm. it was massive.
True.
I know how important being on this show is. I know, because I can see it. I can see what's happening in the next 5 years being on these shows. So that's what I wish I did more, man. Like, just built a solid foundation behind it. So when a time like this happened, we didn't really like have to make a business out of just box office.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing about being a promoter though, isn't it? Is you got event day, you got everything leading up to event day. Event day is when the party happens, and the day after, you're getting ready for the next event day. Especially if you was Lovedo weekly or was it monthly?
Yeah, it was weekly in Newcastle and Lincoln. So it was like,
so there you go.
Then Tuesday you're in Newcastle, and it's just,
yeah, it's a constant cycle. So I hear you about doing the extra content and that, but there is such a thing as spreading yourself too thin. I've experienced that before where I'm just like, oh, Monday I could do this, Tuesday I do that, Thursday I do that, Wednesday, da, 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 and do all these different things.
Yeah.
And then by Sunday I'm exhausted and I haven't had time to market everything and put, do you know what I mean? It's just all of this content just building up. So
yeah,
I hear you about doing it, but there is such a thing, like I say, as spreading yourself too thin. So
completely, completely. And I think it's more just aligning that time as well, knowing where your burnout is.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'll do all this work and then burn out.
Yeah.
And I think it's just worth mentioning that, I guess when I was a promoter, I had so many burnouts that I completely ignored. And that became a detriment to the end of my career. I started to hate promoting.
Right.
Because,
got you.
But, and I didn't really understand it. I was just like, I'm hating this. I should love it, but I'm absolutely hating this. And it's just, I didn't rest enough to reflect on what we had at the time. Mm-hmm. Just got so used to it, but I hated it. So now I guess when you look back, you reflect, it's like, I should give myself some realistic time to chill, like real holidays. Do you know what I mean?
It's the pressures of society as well, man. Like, you feel like you've always just got to be keeping it moving, or you see the way people are on social media, like team no sleep, we keep it moving, we work hard all the time, when in reality, like, a burnout, if you burn yourself out, you're no use to anybody. Like, you need to have the balance to be able to perform at your maximum levels, or it's pretty useless.
100%, man. Literally. But you learn, we've now had the time to learn from our mistakes. And to be honest, if I was a little bit more focused, I probably would have sustained a few more relationships with certain people that I reflect back now and think, hey, like, that friendship was my fault. Do you know what I mean? Because I was so focused on my thing, because my thing was sick at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But you look back now and go, oh man, like, I should have really been there for my friend's birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man, I should have really liked
it. This is so relatable. Like, I don't think I've been to hardly any birthday parties, or like,
nah.
You miss the special occasions, the gatherings of the homies when they're going out for food. Like, that is a little bit disheartening at times. If there's one thing I could change looking back, it would probably be making more time for stuff like that. 100%.
Yeah. You know what it is? It's more like, for me, it wasn't so much missing them. It was the, right, I've got a set tonight. They're starting partying at like 8 o'clock, so I can do 8 till kind of 8:30, 9 o'clock there, and then I've got a cut. But by 9 o'clock, hardly anyone's even there yet, because they know they're going to be turning up till 2.
The vibes haven't even started then, bro.
Exactly.
You
know,
you may as well not go to the warm-up.
No, exactly. Exactly. But it's like, yeah, so those kind of things. You know what my biggest one is? I missed a friend's wedding. I didn't go to a friend's wedding because of a DJ set. And I was so focused. This was at a point where I was at my most focused with work. And I was just like, nothing can come before work because I have goals to reach. Mm. And looking back at that time, brother, I wish I'd just taken a night off and gone to my friend's wedding. Right.
Well, when you're in that system, it's really hard to think about anything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I've tried to justify it. I actually fortunately had the, mate, I'll set the scene for you. I've always wanted to catch up with one of my friends who literally made it obvious that, hey, Demi, like, I'm not even going to tell you what's wrong. I just hope one day you notice it. And then through lockdown and the sort of opener, I had to go and see my friend. I met him and we spoke, and he told me what he went through, because he always wanted the best for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, I'm listening to him tell me, and I try to explain to him that I was in my own world with all these responsibilities about certain things. And he was just like, yeah, I got that from day one. But the difference was, I don't think you even tried to come out to see what it was like to be in my world. I literally was crying to this guy. I was like, fuck, like, obviously, to a certain extent, I'm kind of like, bro, you should be a little bit more, you put emphasize with my situation a little bit more and understand that I had lots of responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
But the other part for me was the truth, saying, did I have time? And the answer is, yeah, like, it was there. Like, my club night wasn't going to die off if I...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You see what I mean?
You're always thinking in your head, if you step away for one night, like, it's going to fall apart. Like, I have to be there. Like, I can't take the night off. Like, that's it.
Like, someone's going to mess it up. And in reality, that's what lockdown is, right? A kind of blessing to discover those things. Because I till today, probably would have been a lot more stubborn and thought, no chance. Like, I was busy. That's it.
You know what it is? Until you manage to take a step back, you don't really realize there's a difference between not having time and not making time.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? So, like, I've always, until obviously lockdown, and actually, you know what? It was a little bit before lockdown when I started to ease up and take more opportunities to see friends and be more social and stuff. But until that moment, I always was like, I can't do this. I haven't got the time. And it was only when I started realizing, actually, I have got the time. I'm just not making the time to do these things, because I'm choosing to spend my time doing on something else. Do you know what I mean? When I could allocate that to another day and use this opportunity now to be social. So, like, I think once you take a step back, you do realize, actually, you know what? I can make the time to do this. Check in on friends. Just go and have a coffee, or just go and have a drink in the evening, or some video game, whatever it is. However you want to socialize. Like, you never realize until you just step back, innit?
100%. 100%. That is a good point. Making time is different from not having. Yeah, for sure. And that's sort of where I've been in the last... Yeah, it just seemed like it's been a bit of a roller coaster. But I'm enjoying it in the same breath, you know, because the things that maybe I'm reflecting on are really uncomfortable, but they're so beneficial because I can pick that up now and take it to the next. Mm-hmm. I mean, take that and learn from it and try and make it a benefit for myself. And that's probably what I'm doing the most now, just taking a bit more time to reflect about everything, you know?
What was it actually like then running a company like Lovedo with having such like a mass appeal and having done so many events across the country, across Europe, out in the Middle East? Like, did you feel any pressure coming into that role? And like, how did you find yourself growing into that, like, going forward?
Matt, to me, Matt Smythe, right? It is like...
Matt's a legend, by the way. Big up, Matt.
Yeah. Matt from... I'm going to go as far as saying this. I've never met my real dad at all. So I've always been with a stepdad who loves me, but probably gave me yes to everything, you know? So I don't think I learned to be a man ever. I learned that from my friends. So people like Cedric, who are alpha male, you met him, right? Who are alpha male, people like that. I'd look at them and a lot of my friends took responsibility of me. They kind of understood that there was like a lot of things Dumi didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And they took it upon them to sort of teach me certain things, you know? So I was surrounded by a lot of good friends. When I met Matt, it was different. I started to speak like him and approach situations the same way he would. And he probably helped me understand what the nature of business in the events were. He's a very difficult character to stand. Like, if you're not a patient person, he doesn't tell you this because he's stood in front of DJs and goes, stop playing that fucking shit, you know? Like, you really have to have patience with that guy. So I took a lot of that. And then he realized that I was just trying to learn as much as I could. And that I really, really like loved hip hop, loved the culture, and I felt comfortable. So when it was time for me to start taking on more responsibility, I had proven that just based on data, really, that then the months like November, which all the sales go down, you know, people not going out as much, those are the months that our numbers were going up.
Nice.
And because I knew that data, I'd always put on something like the Sound Clash to sort of have a completely, not completely relied on students who just went out weekly, but on people who were fans of something completely different.
Mm-hmm.
So when I started to come up with different formats like that, he gave me trust to do London. London ended up being extremely successful. And that's where I think he sort of really stepped back and said, hey, like, look, we're partners, 50-50, and I'm going away to Spain. Good luck.
is that where he lives now? Does he live in Spain now? Yeah.
He's got a house in Spain.
Right.
But
he's got the right idea. He's got the right idea.
Scouting what Spain looks like. He's got all these goals, you know, things he wanted to do. So back then he was just going in there, living, testing the waters. And plus, obviously, he's the owner of and founder of Tup Tup Palace and a few other stuff. So it's like, he didn't really need to do this, but he's such a crazy fan of hip hop, like on a different level. To a level where I'm like, okay, that I get to a certain part, then I don't know much more. But he's such a big fan that he loved it was a passion. So when it made money, he just encouraged me, and I obviously trusted him. Any problem, I call him.
Okay.
Like, we had issues in Dubai mostly, and I'd just be like, bro, like, I don't know what's going on here. Tell me, what do I need to do? Where do I need to go? And he always knew and could anticipate for problems that we were always, I was always the sort of person who'd go solve them, but he, strategy, the craziest mind.
Okay. So he's left you in charge. So he's kind of left you, you're like the boss now, essentially.
Yeah, he just left me to sort of decide what I do with the brand, and he'll just support it whenever. His big thing is digital, and it's always been since I've met him.
Okay.
You know, he always wanted to do these shows and podcasts, but I guess back then I had got so stuck in the party that I was like, tell me what I need to do about the party, man, because it's digital stuff. Is consuming. I don't want to stand there with a camera recording every day, but I definitely want to stand in a club and put on an event, you know. So
where do you feel the future of it is going, Dummy? Like, with obviously this lockdown dragging on, nearly hitting a year now, obviously closures left, right and center, like, where do you feel personally like the future of Clubland is going, and like the future for obviously Lovedo if we manage to make it out the other side of this?
100%. I think the future for it, I believe anyway, is that the future is building a community without having club nights, community and social. And I think what I mean by that is being able to do other things that entertain people without having to have a paycheck for it. Clubs were all about come to my club, have its experience, here's this money. But without lockdown, I think if you're a club promoter or a nightclub, and you're not trying to do anything now while people are at home, or trying to entertain people while you're at home, I think as a brand, you're just going to take the first 6 weeks of the clubs coming back and everyone running into your club. Then after that, it's dead. Mm-hmm. So I guess if you're a promoter wanting to just take the money for the first few weeks of lockdown being uplifted, then you're going to do well for 6 weeks. But I think for people who want to be promoters for the next generation, like we do with Lovedo, I think there needs to be more of a strategy on trying to build and entertain people on social.
You feel that's why places like Twitch have got so big now?
And like... Yeah. It's exactly what you guys are doing, you know, with this podcast. Mm-hmm. When the clubs open, promoters are paying attention. They're going to be the ones going, well, we haven't built our social though, so let's book Silas and DJ Double, because they have a social and they might mention us, you know? Mm-hmm. You guys are going to be the influencers, but clubs, none of us are influencing anything. Yeah. So I think if we can find a way to influence people, even at a micro perspective, we could have a brand that would last a long time.
I feel like certain DJs have definitely took this opportunity to step out the box and really put themselves in the shop window. And we've had this conversation a few times. It seems to be the DJs that have been pretty quiet before. You may not see them so active on socials, but seem to be at the front of the line when it comes to like making noise whilst everybody's at home. And I feel like they're the ones that are probably going to win on, like you say, win on the other side of this. The 100%. Ones that have kept everyone tapped in.
You guys, Andy P...
Andy P, he needs a he deserves a trophy for his
Andy
consistency.
P's definitely, he's definitely putting another zero on his club fee when he comes out of lockdown, without a doubt, man.
Is he on like day 700 with these videos now? I've lost count.
You know, it's funny. I had this very same question you had is the same question Andy asked me at the start of lockdown.
Okay,
and I was just like, get out there and post something every day. Just do it for your mindset. Firstly, do you know what I mean, your mind state, but just for you as well, to put yourself out there. And I think I had the same conversation with Jonesy. But it's different, you know. People are in different situations. For Jonesy, it's time to spend some time with his kids. You know, like for Andy, who lives on his own, it's like, bro, like create content every day, do it. So to see him doing it, I speak to him every day, and the benefits are massive. There's some big things coming his way, and our promoters should take the same example, you know, and do something that content that makes people want to watch you, so when the clubs do come back, you can rip those awards.
How have you maneuvered in lockdown, Dummy? Like, how have you handled the whole situation personally? Like, I feel like you've still been working quite a lot with the affirmative stuff. But like, how has this last year been as a journey for you personally?
It's been really encouraging. I think that's the word, really. It's like, it's made me realize a lot about myself. And the very start of it was very exciting for me, because I was kind of like, let me take this affirmative thing to where it needed to be. So when I started to see the results, started to pick up more record label work, and started to be at that place where I really wanted affirmative to be, and we started to balance out money. You know, the fact that I was losing a lot of income from the events just started to balance out with the media side, and I could see affirmative growing every day with just the work that was coming in. You know, the trust was building. But I think on the flip side of it, I didn't probably realize how broken I was from the events. And I think I started to realize that actually I get my love from being around a lot of people. I get my creativity from being around with people, like-minded people. So then I started to exercise more, really. I was exercising before, but not to the level that I got to. I started to put together really good routines that would help me focus on my work and what I wanted to achieve. And it's something that I hadn't done before. So, you know, I'd wake up a certain time, work at a certain time, meditate, pray, and then end up in the office. And I'd repeat that every single day. What I found from that is like, there was something really like crazy, weirdly beautiful about being on your own, if you're able to sort of just accept your flaws, you know, what you're good at, what you're not.
I hear that.
And it shocked me, because then I was okay. You know, I was okay being on my own and sort of doing my thing. I live with my girlfriend, so that was nice, obviously, to spend more time with her. But I spend majority of the time out of it in the office, just trying to work out what affirmative was going to be. So it's a journey, man. But I've made it work. I forced it to work for my own benefit.
Okay.
You know, and the results have been physically, I've become in the shape I really wanted to be in. And I guess mentally, I'm a little bit more aligned with my goals, because I'm spending more time creating better habits.
I see, bro. Yeah, I see you training, bro. I've seen some. This guy is ripped, you know.
I was just about to say, that's not something we can just brush over here, because I remember you posting about.
Tommy is ripped, mate. I'm jealous.
Was it like a 100-day challenge or something you did? It included water fasting and all sorts of working out. And you posted your post 100-day photo. And I thought, this guy's taking the piss.
Super, super lean.
He's got the sick club nights going on. He's got this amazing media company doing all sorts for major levels, major labels. And now he's managing to fit in all these workout routines and get himself in that shape. Like, I'm blocking this guy. He's taking the piss now.
Mate, that's really kind of you. But it's connection. I was saying to someone, I've faked my mind a little bit. I've started to connect the two together. I say to myself, I'm not going to do well in business if I'm not in good shape. And I thought about this, and I was talking to my girlfriend about this. It's like, I can have the same mindset with eating shit, right? If I'm really successful at what I'm doing in business and I'm eating shit, I'm going to eat more shit.
Yeah.
And continue being successful.
Yeah.
But in reality, I could do one or the other. But if I did both, I just kind of go, the reason I'm being successful in business is because my workout's working out well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just that's what my mind sort of set to think. It's like, that's what I'm going to do. When I'm saying this to Mr. Play, because he asked, it's like, right, send me the routine. I said,
send me the routine.
Yeah, brother, I was going to ask the same thing, you know, like, I'm in good shape, but my abs aren't like your abs, bro.
Bro, it's for me, CrossFit, like, says it really well. Like, the guys from CrossFit, they've completely changed the idea of fitness away from looking good and much more about performing better.
Hmm.
And because you're so focused on trying to get your best time, or you're trying to not miss out a workout, or you're just trying to do a little bit of a warm up and then that's it. Because they've changed the idea of fitness, that's what I've taken from it. You know, go performance over trying to look good. Because I think looking good is like, you can look good for a certain amount of time on a beach when you take an Instagram photo and stuff. And I must say, bro, the most demotivating times is when I take a picture like that, put it on Instagram, because I'm like, oh shit, what now? You know?
don't do it for the gram. Do it for yourself.
Consciously, you're not doing it for the gram, but you feel like the achievement's done because you've said you've done it.
In
reality, like, I'm much more fitter when I'm not even posting about it and doing it for performance.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like training and being in the gym and all that stuff is so integral to like just keeping the mind in a good space. Like, I've not been, since the gym have closed, I have this thing where I can't train outside. I hate going like running and stuff. I'm like a gym guy. So at the minute, I'm completely like off the rails, and I'm just waiting for the government to get these gyms back open, because without the training, it's a little bit of, some days are more of a struggle than others. So I gotta give it, you dummy, mate. That routine's working wonders over there.
Also, bro, I was saying to Jonesy, it's the days that you feel like not working out are the days where you just do 2 minutes. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
2 minutes of just jumping around. That helps.
Something is better than nothing, right?
Do 10.
They're the best days, in my opinion. When I have days, and don't get me wrong, I don't do it every day. There's days where I'm like, I can't be bothered, and I just don't do it. But it's the days when I'm like, I cannot be asked, but I just start doing it anyway. And then once I'm starting and I've started sweating, I think, I've got a shower, so I might as well finish the workout now, because I'm already sweaty and I'm going. And then I kind of get, I usually get at least 90% of the way through. Sometimes I get to that 90% and I'm like, you know what? I can't be asked now, but it's cool because I've done that much. But and going on what Styler said as well. Go on.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, did you read, you've read the book, haven't you? Power of Habits, I think, by James Clear.
No, I haven't read that.
What you just said is literally like a line from it.
Oh, okay. Go. I'm plagiarizing.
Like, it's written in the books, you know?
Yeah.
Just to just do a little bit, especially the days where you don't want to do it, especially on cold days and stuff like that. If you just do it for the first minute, you're fine, because you're still doing it, you know?
Yeah. What's the book called, sorry? Power of Habits.
Yeah. Power of Thinking. Power of Habits. It's by James Clear. I can't remember the title, but I think it's The Power of Habits.
And you recommend it, yeah?
Yeah, James Clear.
James
Clear. I recommend it to absolutely anyone, because it's all about habits and creating new habits.
Perfect. It's going on the list. It's going on the list, mate.
I think that's the key for me on the off days, bro. Like, if I jump in and force myself, I'm fine once I get going. It's the initial pushing yourself and actually going to the gym or jumping in and actually getting it done. That's where I struggle. But once the wheels are moving, ain't no stopping me. Lovely.
I hear you. You're not the only one. A lot of people are like that.
Talk to us about Affirmative then, dummy man. I feel like this is like your baby right now. I'm following the socials. Like, you guys are doing some super amazing work. Like, I'm obviously being a bit of a video guy myself and being in with the edits, I can appreciate like what you guys are doing. And with such a sick like client base, I just wanted to ask like the role of like networking within building your business. Has that played like a huge role in getting it to where it is? I know you mentioned before about when you come to the UK and you were trying to apply for jobs in London and maybe they weren't really taking notice, but now you're kind of tapped in with the majors that are mainly based down there. Like, how's it been for you? And do you think networking has played like a huge part in building Affirmative to where it is now and the importance of it within building a business?
Yeah, man, definitely. Networking for me has been the pinnacle. It's the thing that I find quite easy to do because I'm interested in people. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm really intrigued just where people come from, what they're like, what they speak about, what they believe in, what their goals are. I'm intrigued because, you know, other people inspire me. Mm-hmm. And obviously some other people like Hitler, they don't inspire you, but you learn why they become who they are. Do you understand? Mm-hmm. So you're not trying to, you're just trying to sort of develop your mindset by understanding other human beings. So for me, networking came when I decided to move to London, a long time ago now. I did it three times, and on the third time I went there to build my business, Affirmative, and that was in sort of 2017 at the start of
live in London now?
Sorry?
Are you based there now?
I moved back.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is, you remember I said to you I was really frustrated with the club, everything. Mm-hmm. And that was the time I actually went out of shape. You know, I was like, just hate it. And the truth is I was depressed and I didn't really understand it. I got to understand what it is now. I got to understand how I got there. But the basis of Affirmative was that I was kind of depriving myself from not doing what I really loved doing, which was Affirmative, creating it into something I think it should have been. When I run off to London, it was very rapid. It was like, okay, I've got some money here. Let me run off to London and do what I do best, which is just trying to connect with people. Mm-hmm. Because I wasn't connecting with those people that would understand my dream of what I wanted Affirmative to be. At the time, it didn't work out with the partnership I had. So what ended up happening is because it wasn't calculated in the way, I lost money and came back to Lincoln with no money. Okay. The only thing I had was an office, a small one in this very building. I stayed in the office, never really told anyone, but I just muscled it out and stayed in the office. I put on a few more events, made some money back. And then I decided actually to stay in Lincoln and use the network of people who've been in my phone book for a while.
Okay.
But also, while I was in London, sort of roaming around, going to places and having these meetings that never really led to anyone anywhere, I just started to hit those people up, you know, like, I'm still able to help and work with you guys. And at the time, I picked up a job with Dan Kaplan. It wasn't paid, but I started to make my own money, a little bit of money at the time. Okay. So I was investing in myself to go to these shows, record him, and deliver footage. The label hadn't had someone who'd come in, shoot, edit, and deliver it. So I would come off stage when Dan Kaplan would perform, edit the video, edit the pictures, because I'd take some pictures, boom, 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 deliver. Because I was like hungry for that.
That rapid turnaround.
Yeah, man. So I just started with that. And I think because I started to do that, a guy from the label took notice and just started to speak to me more often. We built a really good friendship and we also built a really good business relationship. But I hadn't learned anything at that time. So he fired me. He was like,
no way.
there's a lot going on here. I got fired by Warner Music.
Wow.
To start off with. It's like, we don't want your business anymore. And then when I learned why, because I was still so distracted with the events, mm-hmm. I started to come back in a different way. I said to myself, I needed to build an agency because I can do a lot on my own,
right.
But I needed a team because I can burn out just like anyone else. Mm. And as a freelancer, you know this, stylist, you guys know this. Like, you can't always deliver your best work every time. And the label needs consistency, your best work absolutely every time. So yeah, eventually, man, I managed to build a relationship back with the same guy, with the label, and he managed to give me a little bit more trust again, showed him what we could do. And I brought Danny on board, who was someone who worked and helped me with the events. He started to build a better skill set because he could do all the ad creation and I could do all the shooting. And we sort of created two departments, really, ad creation and, you know, the video production stuff.
Okay.
And then through those two elements, we've then had other freelancers we trust who've ended up working with Firmative alongside us. And it's been a trusting relationship, fortunately, with the guys at Double Free.
Okay.
Who ended up being our part, you know, I've ended up sort of owning a part of their company and they're part of us. And then together as a collection, because we're nice guys. That's the best way I can put it. We're not trying to like mess anyone up. Like, we're trying to just do the best we can and get paid and walk away from the job, you know? So because the five of us deliver something different, you know, we've got Ed who does amazing photos that you see on Instagram. Danny, who does all the ad wizard creation.
Danny's a little legend, man.
He's a little legend. And then obviously there's myself and Ben, who's part of the twins, who also shoot video, edit it and stuff like that. And then there's more and more freelancers being involved with us who want the type of work we're doing. Mm-hmm. And on a label perspective, they understood what my goal was in the first place. So they've supported that and given me more and more responsibility as Firmative grows. And yeah, and that's why we focused on the music industry, you know, because one, it's my passion, and two, it works for what we're trying to do. And then three, there's no other feeling of seeing, again, the same feeling I used to have with DJs, but no other feeling of seeing an artist use your content and it to be a benefit mm-hmm. for them, you know? So yeah, that's what Firmative is, a creative content agency now. And we're just trying to build it and grow it to a place no one else has ever seen or, you know, imagined, really.
When it got to that point where you had to build a team and you've gone back to one and you've had to bring people on board, was doing stuff on your own for so long and being so tapped in, like, was delegation something like you struggled with? Bring a lot, like, trusting people to come in and drive the ship with you. Like, I know that's something I've struggled with over the years, only because I'm so particular with the way I do stuff. So, like, do you think delegation and building the right team around you is, like, super important in business?
100%, bro. I'm so lucky, right? And Danny, I think Danny knows this now. Danny's been my guy, right? Danny's the head of creative for Firmative. Mm-hmm. He came in as a photographer / not too sure what he wants to do. We kind of threw him in the exciting event stuff and he enjoyed that. And because he enjoyed that, it was quite easy to do the both. And he's worked with me to grow this. But he's got a very good eye for branding. So when I started to see what Danny could do that I can do, I was like, my God, like, I need to trust more people.
Yep.
But in the freelance world, man, too many snakes.
I'm telling you.
Too many snakes.
This is the reason it's hard to, like, really open up the door sometimes, man, because like you say, most times you don't really know who you can trust, and trying to find that real solid team, it's hard to come by, man. It really is. But when you get it, you're in, like.
Yeah, without a doubt. Well, my relationship in London, I'll never speak about and say their names because that's just, like, crazy. But the reason, like, we fell out, you know, like, because they didn't trust me, I didn't trust them, and it is what it is. Mm-hmm. There's certain elements to that was my insecurities of not being able to trust anyone,
yep.
You know, not being open and forthcoming on certain things. And I think there's an element to this that they needed to be more open and forthcoming. We just didn't get it in the end. Mm. And that was a big lesson for me. That's where I started to understand that I needed to trust people and give people a chance. Mm-hmm. And I think it's through working with someone hand to hand and not handing it all over.
I got you.
That I've learned how to trust people. So I'm going to give you a job, but we're going to work on it together. Okay. Because I need to see if you understand who I am and I understand who you are. And whether at the end of it, you go home and think, yeah, I'm happy with working with Dimi. And I feel the same.
Got you.
And we had loads of people that we've worked with that showing the opposite, you know, taking our work and going, I did this. This was mine. Da 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 da. And I'm like, oh man.
you fumbled the bag fumbled. On day one. Yeah. What have you done?
I really liked you as well. You're a really good guy.
Yeah. You know what I find as well? Not even just the fact that there's a lot of snakes in the industry and people that are out for themselves. I've found there's too many instant experts. Mm. And by that, I mean like there's people that I've tried to do projects with that after working on a very brief period of time with them, I realized you're not up to the task. You have no idea what you're doing. And you've just said you did because you bought the right equipment for it or whatnot. Do you know what I mean? Like, I find a lot of people straight away, they get the equipment, watch a 7-minute YouTube video. Oh, that's it. I've got my degree now. Like I'm good to go. Do you know what I mean? So, I mean, you must have come across that as well.
And as you said, bro, the more and more you see it, the more and more you spot it. I see it. Yeah. Like today I had 3 emails of people, photographer, da 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 da. And it took me seconds to go, you're faking it.
Yep.
You're right. Do you know what I mean?
You learn to figure it out after a while. And when you've been in the industry for a minute, you can normally sniff it out beforehand, can't you?
100%. Bro, and I think, look, the label have taught me a lot. So I'm inside their conversations, their conference calls, their marketing, part of their conversations, you know. So one thing they have taught me is that you are at service for someone else. And I've started to push back a lot because every freelancer wants to show their work, wants to show how creative they are. They want to post the best videos so they can get the likes, they can get the gratification of everyone saying they're fucking amazing. But in reality, like, if you're a videographer, you are producing services and you have to serve someone. And I think when I started to understand it that way, and we now just focus on doing the best work that's going to help Nath, that's going to help whoever, like Munya. And sometimes it's a very tiny part. It's as simple as, can you do these billboards for Cardi B? You know, we're not part of the fucking campaign. Like, I didn't come up with creative to get Cardi B in those photos. I mean, I wish I was there, but like that part of it is just, we're just designing the billboard and we just want to make that part of it, like, a helpful aspect for whatever Cardi B's trying to do in the UK.
Got you.
You know, probably make more sales to get to the top charts. So I think when we started to see it that way, we super quickly realized that we have to focus on serving other people instead of us looking good, or even me as an individual looking like I'm doing amazing. It's like, nah, like, forget me. This is not about furniture. It's not about me. This is about this person.
Yeah.
And
they need to reward the rewards.
It's just the service. Yeah, I have exactly the same thing with the radio edit business that I do. And it is a sense of like, everything I get from the labels and from the artists, I'll do the radio edits for them, send it back, and it goes on radio. Mm-hmm. But the reason I don't post it on my own Instagram is because it's not about me. Like, yeah, I did the edit, but it's not my project.
I got you.
There was a producer created it. An engineer mixed it. The artist even made the song. The label marketed it. I was just a tiny, tiny little cog in that whole system. So, like, it's great to be a part of the projects, but it is a difference between realizing when you are providing the service and just helping them do it, and when you're actually like creating the service for them. Do you know what I mean? Like creating the final thing.
And what you just said there, right? try and explain it to a freelancer and have them actually take it in. It's not a thing. And I used to be one of those guys. I didn't understand it. I was like, that's my work. That is my work. You've put in out my work. Then we did this. And then, yeah, later on, you start to realize how silly to a point of view you look. Like,
yeah,
we videographers, us, this creative agency, we are at the service of other people. And I think maybe I also learned from Andy, because Andy and Martin have such a really good relationship, and they're all about entertaining their people, you know, being DJs and going to entertain people.
Yeah.
Start to ring that. Like, they're providing a service. Mm-hmm. It's like, why can't we freelancers do the same? And I guess coming back to your question about trust, that's why, bro, because someone wants to come in your business and take a part and say, hey, I did that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I got you.
Rather than going, I worked with Firmative and together we did this for this person and here are the benefits.
Yeah,
You know, they're trending because that BTS, we didn't create the song, but the BTS that we've done for Anne-Marie is trending number 3. Yay, we did a good job for her.
Mm-hmm. I feel like you guys have got a good crossover though, even without pushing yourself on the front line. I feel like the way you guys advertise and put your stuff out there, you don't really need to have that angle, and it works with what you guys are doing. I feel like the way you guys market and put your stuff out, it just looks great from all angles, man. Like, I'm a massive fan of what you lot are doing.
No, I appreciate it, man. It really does mean a lot. And I guess coming on this podcast, it is a lot for me, because I'm kind of like, I've just had my head down, you know? So to come on this podcast and talk about this for the first time ever is nice, man.
Yeah, we appreciate that, man. We appreciate
I appreciate it more. Do you understand? Like,
we know you've got another conference call in like 5 minutes, so we can't keep him too long. if we had our way, we'd have him on here for hours.
Yeah. This would be another 2-hour episode.
There was one more question I just wanted to ask before we leave, and it was in regards to the whole, like, there's this myth about trying to make it in the music industry, the creative industry, moving to London seems to be like the thing that people have to do to really make it work. I know you just mentioned you went down there, man, and based up, and you've done your network and you've come back and forward. Like, now you've experienced and actually done that yourself. Would you say that's advisory, or is this whole thing like a complete myth with having to go to the capital to blow, essentially?
Bro, is the...
Because, you know, we've all heard it, man.
I'm really passionate about this subject. I'm really passionate because it's really like, it's really opened my eyes to what I used to like and who I am now. Back then, I used to think that was the way. You needed to go to London, and I did it, right? I moved there 3 times. But there was a big sign, actually, that I've done better not being in London. And I think it's a myth, for sure, because it's all about your mindset and what your goals are going to be like. And I guess in my service industry, travel is paid, you know? Travel is paid. Yeah, granted, it's a little bit more expensive, but travel is secure because your work's good enough. Mm-hmm. I think if you can do something outside of London and have London clients, it says much more about your service.
Yeah.
So I think people who are super talented people, like there's a guy called Joe Harper, artwork designer from Liverpool, does all his clients are from London. Amazing work, bro. And the labels would do absolutely anything to work with him.
Sick.
Because he's good at what he does. So I think, yeah, it's a myth, bro. If you're good at what you do, you're going to get booked. And you guys are like the epitome for it, because you're from Manchester, sat in south of
doubles in Kent.
No one knows where I'm from. No one ever knows where I'm from, and it's not a secret. It's just because I'm
doubles in Dover. Doubles in Dover.
East Sussex, Brighton, then Kent. No, then Hertfordshire, St Albans. Now I'm in Kent. I'm from
down
everywhere.
South.
Yeah, down south. That's it. I'm from the southeast.
100%. But you guys get booked not just nationally in every city in the UK, but you get booked nationally because Your work's amazing, you know, and you put yourself out there. So I think it's that, really, man. Like, it's definitely a myth. And I feel bad for some people that sort of run to London, because you fall into the same problem I had, which is you run out of money and you run out of options. Yeah. Stick where you are, do what you're doing. I've got ambitions to move back down south for different reasons, socially, to be closer to some of my friends at some point.
Okay.
But not for a few years yet.
Okay.
And it's not about my business. It'll be much more about my personal, you know, needs or whatever.
I feel like with your journey, it was the perfect person to ask with you going to London, actually doing that and coming back again. Like,
yeah,
you speaking from experience, you know what I mean? It's
And just to touch on the other point you made, I can't be that good because I never got a booking at Love Day.
we met at the back of it, didn't we? Yeah. We met Love Day being what it was.
Yeah.
We met when I was frustrated about the whole thing.
Mad.
And like, Stylus, those heydays where we're doing the sound clash, you can just see it from my energy. You know, like, I was right in there, absolutely loving it. But, you know, later on to 2017 to 18, I was just like...
That's when you got fed up.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong, the fire still in me to do that. But like, at that point, I didn't really understand it. I was just getting older and thinking, like, my age is going, but
yep.
I need to grow, like, in here.
I hear that fully. I hear you, man. So, bloody hell.
So when we come back, bro... Double, you're on, bro.
Yes, yes.
He's got his booking now.
That's it. I've got one booking in the diary now. Finally.
We're gonna have to get a dummy back on one day because we've got stories from the sound clash and all sorts of Love Do situations. Oh. We could have covered loads.
Yeah, too many stories.
We'll get you back in, bro, 100%. If you're game, that is.
Don't worry, listen, I'm game. I know where this show's going.
Lovely stuff.
I'm going to keep this clip and post it when you guys are like fucking everywhere and you don't even have time for me. I'm going to post that.
I don't know about that, mate. You're going to be the one that's shooting movies.
I was about to say, you're going to be the one filming for us, bro.
If you need a BTS videographer, mate, I need a job.
Come join, bro. Come join.
All right, cool, man. So you may give yourself a plug, bro. Where can the people tap into Affirmative and yourself and... Where can people see what you got going on, man, for the people that are just tapping in for the first time before we let you go?
Yeah, 100%. For people who, yeah, you can find Affirmative just at Affirmative Media. We'll be trying to get the Affirmative on its own. But yeah, at Affirmative Media on Instagram, on Twitter, and yeah, affirmative.co.uk.
Sick.
Don't go on my Instagram. I'm half naked most of the time. So just stick to Affirmative and you probably might find me one day. It's just at Dummy Siwa.
Oh, sick. Oh, Dummy, man. Thank you. Thank you for coming on, my bro.
Thank you,
we
bro.
We appreciate you, man. We know you got a busy day, so we'll let you get to it. But yeah, we appreciate you, man. And I'll hit you up when it's ready to go out.
Love, guys. Let me take a picture. Just seeing you
Let's
guys.
Get it.
I just did the same.
That's it. Thanks, bro.
All right, Dummy. Take care, my bro. I'll see you soon, yeah.
Cheers.
Take care, buddy.
Thanks, bro.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, brother.
Adios.
Adios.